KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Tanya Mosley.
That's it. U.S. is going to the quarterfinals, a date with France on Friday.
The U.S. women's soccer team is on a winning streak as it defends the World Cup title in France this year. We'll hear about the team's progress in the tournament and its efforts off the field to address sexism and unequal pay in the U.S. Soccer Federation. And then at 9:30 this afternoon, San Francisco is expected to pass a comprehensive ban on the sale, manufacture, and even online delivery of e-cigarettes. We'll get the latest from KQED health reporter Laura Clivens. Welcome to Forum. I'm Tanya Mosley, in for Michael Krasny. The U.S. women's soccer team is on a roll again in its quest for the fourth World Cup title this year. Its fourth World Cup title. Team USA advanced to the quarterfinals Monday with a 2-1 victory over Spain. They are on fire and undefeated at this point. But the team may meet their toughest opponent yet on Friday when they face off against tournament host France. And there's another battle looming, a lawsuit against the U.S. Soccer Federation over gender discrimination and unequal pay. With us on the phone to talk about all of this is Carla Overbeck. She's currently the assistant coach of Duke University women's soccer team, and she's also a member of the U.S. team that won the first ever Women's World Cup in 1991. Welcome, Carla.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we also have with us, joining us by Skype, Caitlin Murray. She's a journalist who covers soccer and wrote the book, The National Team, The Inside Story of the Women Who Changed Soccer. Thanks for joining us, Caitlin.
Of course, no problem.
And I want to give the call-out number for all of you fans out there who want to talk with this all-star team and ask questions or comments. Our number is 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email form at kqed.org. This is only a half-hour segment, so if you want to talk with us, call those numbers or email us. Well, Caitlin, you are in France. How's it going out there?
It's great. I'm following the U.S. team, and as you mentioned, they're on a roll. They're scoring a ton of goals. They seem to be having a lot of fun, and it's really hot here, so I'm staying out of the sun.
It's hard to stay out of the sun when you're there to watch soccer, I imagine.
Yeah, it is. I was sweating yesterday in Reims, as the city is called, but it was a good performance from the U.S. to beat Spain. I think Spain gave them the most trouble that they've had in this tournament. So I think that was the sort of win they needed. It wasn't coasting. It wasn't beating Thailand 13-0. It was an actual test, and the Americans proved that they could get past it.
Yeah, and now they're up against France on Friday. They're also a really good team as well.
Yeah, I think that France and the U.S. have been the two teams in the conversation as the favorites. The U.S., I think, because they've dominated so much in the group stage, they sort of have taken the mantle of the team that everyone is sort of betting on to win the World Cup. But France is a very good team, high-quality team. They've never made it to the final of a World Cup, but they definitely have the talent. And as the host country, I think, you know, there's going to be a lot of momentum behind them. They're going to be in a position where I think it's hard to rule them out, even as good as the U.S. has been playing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's get to this lawsuit. I want to talk with both of you, Caitlin Murray and Carla Overbeck. So the U.S. players apparently agreed to arbitration in their equal pay suit against the U.S. Soccer Federation. And according to the Wall Street Journal, they reportedly they will go into mediation after the games in July. Caitlin, tell us a little bit about what the players are alleging and what they're asking for.
Yeah, they're alleging institutionalized gender discrimination that has gone on for years. And I think Carlo might be able to speak to the fact that it's gone on much longer than these players have been on the team. But it comes down to compensation and non-compensation issues. So part of it is equal pay, which has sort of become the talking point. The women being paid less than the men's team It is a little complicated because each team negotiates for different contracts and those structures are different. But the women say that more money is being made available to the men's team overall. The other portion is the non-compensation issues, things like the women having to play on artificial turf when the men do not, the women having to fly commercial while the men are getting charter flights. So it's not just money, it's not just equal pay, it's about the treatment and the women saying that they haven't been treated as well as the men's team.
Carla Overbeck, I had mentioned that you were on the team that won the first ever Women's World Cup in 91. And hearing all of this, hearing about the charter flights versus the commercial flights, it just makes me think about you guys back then. You were talking about these same things, the 96 Atlanta Summer Games. You all sat out complaining that you had to stay in the dumpy hotels and wear the men's uniforms and take Holiday Inn shuttles to games. So, I mean, all these years later, hearing all of this, tell me how it feels in knowing that these women are dealing with some of the same issues.
You know, I think it's hard because it comes from the top, which is FIFA, and they oversee soccer worldwide. And, you know, until it's equal at the top, I think it's going to be hard to make it equal at U.S. soccer because, you know, when a men's side qualifies for a World Cup, FIFA gives that national governing body, their federation, $1 million, and they don't do that on the women's side. And so I think U.S. soccer, you know, has a battle higher than they are to fight first. And it's really complicated. And I know the pay has gotten so much better, and circumstances have gotten so much better since I played, you know, through 2000. And you know, hopefully they can agree on some things and work it out because, you know, obviously U.S. soccer wants to support them as best they can, and the women want to continue to play at the level they're playing and even higher. And it's their dream to be playing in the United States and playing on the U.S. team and representing their country. And they just want to do that without having to worry about these outside factors.
Yeah, you're mentioning that the women are paid more, but they aren't at the top. And can you both talk about the concerted effort underway to build more leadership and what that looks like all these years later? Caitlin.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the U.S. women's national team, you know, back in the 90s and still today, views itself as sort of the leader in a lot of these discussions. And as Carlo mentioned, FIFA is definitely a big part of the problem. And, you know, I've been here in France talking about some of these issues with U.S. soccer. And, you know, it does come down from the top. I mean, FIFA definitely provides a lot more funding for the men, you know, prize money, certain things that can be passed on.
And
The
can you lay
women's.
out for the listener what FIFA looks like and what the leadership team, all men, I presume?
It is all men. They've in recent years passed some reform measures to get more women involved in FIFA, but the people who are bringing in these women are the men who have been there, and there's some concern that they identify women who will support the status quo instead of, you know, certain women like Moria Dodd comes to mind, someone who's really been a big advocate for women in soccer at FIFA. She lost her election to be part of the FIFA executive committee. So, you know, there are efforts to improve FIFA, but, you know, one thing Megan Rapinoe's talked about a lot is FIFA hasn't sent the message that women's soccer is a priority for them. They, you know, do certain things here and there. It's not as FIFA does nothing, but they have not sent a message that is actually a priority and something that they're actively thinking about when, you know, they very well could be. FIFA has $3 billion in their reserves. They can afford to care about women's soccer. It just sort of seems that they don't.
My first thought, though, is that perhaps because we think about other sports, that the men's team must be making more money than the women as far as revenue. But we see in reports that they actually, the women's team generated more revenue than the men's teams over the past 3 years. So there was this analysis of the USSF financial statements obtained by the Wall Street Journal, which showed that approximately 50.8 million in revenue the women generated compared to 49.9 million in men's games. So what is at issue here if it's not a priority, but yet the women, although it's a slight difference, they're still neck and neck when it comes to generating revenue?
Well, you know, it's something that I actually talk about in my book as well, that, you know, since the 2015 Women's World Cup, women's national team games have been bringing in more game day revenue for U.S. soccer than the men's team. I think from U.S. soccer's standpoint, the men's team has a lot more ability to bring in revenue. The men's team gets appearance fees when they go, you know, play a game against Brazil or something like that. The women don't get those sorts of appearance fees. U.S. soccer also can host an event like the 2016 Copa America. It's a men's tournament. They made $50 million. They did that because they have a men's team. And having a women's team doesn't provide that. I think, you know, part of it, part of the discussion is just the structure that exists around women's soccer overall. Women's soccer was banned in Brazil until 1971. It was banned in England, you know, up until the 70s. So the infrastructure on the women's side just isn't there. And that becomes part of these conversations and whether, you know, whether the U.S. women's national team should be penalized for not having that sort of structure, not being able to command those fees. I mean, it's very complicated. I think the women have tried to make it as simple as possible by talking about things like, you know, charter flights, artificial turf, things that are very simple to compare.
Carla Overbeck, you've been in this game, in this industry for quite a long time. Caitlin mentioned internationally some of the revenue and the lack of revenue for women, but I'm looking at examples of players in Spain. Soccer is huge, but women's soccer and football is traditionally overlooked. But then they recently set a record of attendance at a women's club game. I'd love to know from you what you feel like this growth signals for the future of the game.
I mean, I think it's incredible. I think it was over 60,000 that was in Spain.
Yeah,
and, and I think Real Madrid is, I think I just heard the other day that they are going to now have a women's club team comparable to the men's side. So I think this is what it's going to take. And I know FIFA, you know, they had an overhaul of the president, vice president, all these things. And so I'm hopeful that Gianni, who is the president of FIFA now, will I was actually in Paris doing some things for FIFA, and there was a big congress, and, you know, he promised that the women's support for the women is getting better, and I believe that. And I think that, you know, when people are standing up and fighting for what's right, and, you know, the women are very passionate about what they do, and they want to be supported the same way as the men. And so I believe that there's going to be a change. Will it happen overnight? No. But I think it's grown since 1991 when the first world championship in China happened. You know, we barely even had insurance. And so I think it's gotten better. Like I said, it's not going to happen overnight. But I think U.S. soccer is really committed to the women's team, you know, to make changes. And hopefully after the game, you know, this World Cup is over, they can get together and sit down and figure something out for the future.
I'm talking with Carla Overbeck. She's the assistant coach at Duke University for the women's soccer team, and she was a member of the U.S. team that won the first ever FIFA World Women's Cup in 1991. And Caitlin Murray, she's joining us from France via Skype. She is a soccer journalist and author of The National Team, The Inside Story of the Women Who Changed Soccer. If you'd like to join this discussion, give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786, or email us at forum@kqed.org. We have one comment from a woman, Jessica, who writes, "I'm glad to see women's sports getting some coverage." I know that both of you all have been following this and involved in players for quite a long time, but it does seem that as of late, we are receiving or listening to or hearing a lot of coverage that really delves into the complexities of these contract issues and issues over pay and equity, something that actually FIFA has said they wish that the soccer players wouldn't be talking about this publicly. But Carla, I'd love to know from you, how important do you feel it is to be for these women to actually be speaking out in this way?
I mean, I think during the, you know, the tournament, they're obviously concentrating on winning. And hopefully they can sort of put that aside and afterwards have these conversations that maybe can get it a little bit closer to, you know, what the men make and how the men are supported. But like I said, I was just in Paris for the opener, France-Korea, and involved in some meetings with FIFA. And I think with the new president, some things are going to change, and I'm hopeful that they will.
You are the assistant coach of the Duke University's women's soccer team. And so you're talking with these young women about not only the game and coaching them, but looking to their future. Do you all have these discussions around where they sit in this moment in time and really pushing for equity? And how is this generation really thinking about this issue?
This generation is really smart, and obviously they are concerned about their future. And a lot of the players want to go play in the professional league in the United States. Some want to go abroad and play, and they're hopeful that in the future they can make a good living doing so. And so they don't have to, you know, they can follow their dream and continue to play soccer after college and not have to go into banking or be doctors or lawyers, or, you know, they would like to play as long as they can. And so I'm hopeful that this pay gap is getting better and more consistent with the men's side.
Yeah. The realities, though, of being able to play professionally, I would assume there's a small percentage of players who actually get to do that, really in every sport. But I'm thinking about this and the ability to be able to make a living. Caitlin, you followed these women for quite a long time, and you've taken on this issue.
Yeah, I mean, the NWSL is in its seventh season. It's growing. And, you know, World Cup year, the excitement going on in France, that's really important for the NWSL, which is, you know, the third attempt at having a women's league in the United States. And what I think has been really interesting about this World Cup is I assumed that because it's going to be in France, you know, the time zones are going to be sort of weird for Americans, that there might be less enthusiasm for this World Cup than there was when it was in Canada. But Fox Sports, the broadcaster for this World Cup, is reporting higher ratings through their first, you know, few games than they had in 2015. And I'm noticing here in France, a lot of Americans have come to these games. It was one thing in Canada when they were only driving across the border, but it's been really impressive to see the turnout here in France from the Americans. And it's that sort of enthusiasm that can help the club game in the United States and help, you know, there be sustainable growth in women's soccer. And it's not just a short bump or a one-time blip. I think we are seeing that women's soccer is growing in this country, and that's only a good thing for having a strong league, having a place where players can make a living, and having, you know, the ability to increase those salaries, to increase the support and resources in the league. So, you know, I'm hopeful for the future of the league. It's in its seventh year, which is more than any league in the United States has lasted so far. I think it's a positive thing right now.
Let's take some callers. We have David from Berkeley. Hi, David.
Hi. I just wanted to point out, I think for a lot of listeners, they may not appreciate some of the differences can have actually a pretty significant effect on the players. For instance, the issue of artificial turf sounds sort of cosmetic, but the injury rates are quite a lot higher. And even for goalkeepers, I know on certain types of turf, there are long-term health effects that can arise when they play on that. So it's just one example, but I think it would help for listeners to appreciate that, you know, these issues aren't always sort of just a cosmetic choice, but can actually have real consequences. And I think it's sort of ridiculous that FIFA doesn't fix these.
Thank you for your call, David. Carla Overbeck, he brings up a very important point.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I don't enjoy playing on the field turf or the old AstroTurf because it's hard on your joints and your bones, and you know, it's sticky, and it's a much, much different surface than grass. And I know some of the women on the U.S. team were not happy that in Canada the World Cup that was held there was on artificial turf, because they felt like there's no way the men would ever be asked to play on turf.
Mm-hmm. The USA team, the women's team, they're on fire. They're just doing really well. But where do you all both think they're the most vulnerable, not just against France, but the tournament overall? Carla?
You know, it was hard because in group play they weren't challenged that much, and so their game against Spain, you know, you're nervous. You're on this world stage. Lots of millions and millions of people are watching on TV, and there have been so many fans that have flocked to France. It's been unbelievable. And I just, you know, this is going to be a tough game for them with this matchup against France. I feel like it's going to be the final. So I feel like whoever wins this game will have no problem winning the whole thing.
Caitlin.
Yeah, I think there have been real questions about the defense and, you know, having a goalkeeper who has never played in a World Cup before. I think it's been maybe an easy thing to talk about when you've had Hope Solo and Brian Escurry for, you know, the past two decades, and they were such legendary goalkeepers that has kind of put a spotlight on Alyssa Nair. And unfortunately, she and Becky Sauerbrunn together sort of made a mistake against Spain and conceded their first goal of the tournament. And it's certainly not any reason to hit the panic button by any means, but it does sort of show the cracks of, you know, where could this team fail? It might be just in the cohesion of the defense, you know, the communication. I think, you know, this back line isn't as fast as they were in 2015. I have some questions about the defense. And, you know, if there's one team in this tournament that I would be a little bit worried about exposing any defensive vulnerabilities, it is France. France has a lot of firepower. They have a lot of really fast wingers. So I think we're definitely going to see some goals at the very least in the quarterfinal.
Let's take one more call. Marguerite from San Mateo. Hi, Marguerite.
Hi. I was just calling because I did read or heard that I have a daughter who's playing soccer and is going into college playing. But I heard that in Europe that they are looking at having girls and boys play together. I mean, it is a unilateral game. It's a game that, you know, both girls and boys play equally, same rules. And it does really bother me at this date and stage of life that girls are not, women's teams especially, are not playing at the same level with the same provisions. And do you think that will kind of ease in its way to maybe make it more equal? That's just my question.
Very good question. With 90 seconds, Carla Overbeck.
I'm not sure about that one. It's tough. I mean, I know at the early ages, Christine Lilly, who I played with forever on the women's team, is the most capped player, male or female, in the world. She grew up in Wilton, Connecticut, and she played out with boys. And so, but I feel like at an early age, that's okay. I'm not sure about at the higher levels. So, you know, Caitlin might have a different view, but I'm not quite sure that would work.
Well, the women will be going to the quarterfinals against France on Friday, June 28th. Carla Overbeck, thank you for joining us, assistant coach at Duke University, and Caitlin Murray. I'm sorry we didn't get a chance to hear your thoughts on boys and
no
girls
problem.
Playing, but thank you so much for giving us insight on the game and the lawsuit, and my best to you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.